Everyone hits a bump in the road. What do you do with it? Be inspired as we explore the ways people experience, navigate, and manage the ups and downs and twists and turns in this road trip called life. Welcome to another episode of Bump in the Road. The basic podcast is always free. We also have a premium subscription called Bump 2 that lets you listen in on extended behind-the-scenes conversations with our guests. Check it out at www.bumpintheroad.us. Jesse Cody is hiking the good hike and living a good life, but it wasn't always so. Living in New York and Boston, Jesse had lost touch with his authentic self. He became suicidal until a 40th birthday party made him realize that he needed to find a new direction. So the city boy, who'd never hiked, much less set up a tent, set off to hike the Appalachian Trail. And somewhere along the 2,190-mile trek, he found his heart, his soul, and his sanity, and a new direction. Jesse, welcome. I am so pleased to have you here. If you would, give us a little bit of background on yourself and Hike the Good Hike.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, thank you for having me. First of all, I appreciate this. So my name is Jesse Cody. I'm the founder of Hike the Good Hike, which I would probably like to call at this present time a movement. We've got a lot of people falling behind and paying attention to what Hike the Good Hike is and what it's about. What I focus on is using hiking, wilderness exploration, to show a connection to bettering your mental health. Not something I just kind of came up with because I thought it was a good idea. This came to me because for many years I struggled with my own mental health. There were a lot of things within me that were tough to deal with on a daily basis. And I try to do it on my own without really ever seeking out help. And it was, you know, mid to late 30s where my issues really were at the forefront and really dominating me. You know, I battled depression. I battled major insecurity issues. I just felt completely lost in life. And all that together collectively came into these thoughts of suicide. And as I was just getting a bit older, after 35, 36, those thoughts started dominating even more. And more, I just felt to myself, I don't want to be here anymore. I don't like the life that I live. I don't like the way that I act. And I just don't see what the purpose is of living if I can't better myself. From there, this kind of crazy happening, not crazy, but I turned 40. And turning 40, you know, that's a big birthday. And so I was lucky enough to have a lot of good friends and my family put together a big party for me. Just a little backstory on that. You know, there were very few people in my life who knew what I was battling, just because of who I was and probably because of being a man and believing that I have to toughen up and that I'm not allowed to have these kind of thoughts and I'm not allowed to speak out that I'm depressed and I cry. There weren't a ton of people in my life who knew the things that I was going through. So in a way, it kind of felt like I was acting because for a lot of times I didn't show it and I showed a different version of myself. So, you know, for my friends and family to do this, it was just a celebration of my life. Jesse's turning 40. Let's get together and throw him a big bash. And on that day, you know, there might have been 60, 70 people at this party. And, you know, I can specifically remembering days ahead of this that I thought to myself, this might be my last birthday. And then in the moment of the birthday party, there was this kind of recognition of love surrounding me and a lot of love, you know, not just from my family, but my friends, so many people here to celebrate me. And I had this thought like, man, how can one think so often about ending their life when they have so much good in their life? So I sat on that for a little while. You know, I thought about that for a couple of days and I thought to myself, this isn't fair. If you were to do this, you would change the way a lot of people live their lives. You would affect so many. And so thinking that, I also thought to myself, you haven't actually given yourself a chance. You've never reached out for help. You've never talked to anybody. You haven't explored all the avenues that one should explore when they're battling such incredible demons. So I made this decision. I said to myself, I want to live, but I don't know how to do that. And if I'm going to live, I have to figure out how to live with purpose. Like I want to embrace life. but I don't know how to do that. Now, I was strictly a city guy. You know, at 40, I've spent majority of my life in the Boston, Massachusetts area, and about 4.5-5 years in New York City. All in that time working in the restaurant industry and running bars. Probably not the best career choice for someone who's battling demons. Within that, I also was battling narcissistic behavior. I developed those things because of my insecurities. And, you know, as a restaurant manager, when people look at what a restaurant manager can be, especially a male, I was a lot of those things. I was taking advantage of my staff. I was drinking heavily. I was doing all the things that came easy to me because no one was really stopping me. And, you know, I started recognizing that there are a lot of things that you have to change about yourself, Jesse. You're going to have to figure out this new path that you want to take in order to find a way to live and live right. So when I made this decision and I started trying to think about what are the things that I can do, I knew one, that I had to at least take myself out of the restaurant industry if for a while, if not forever. Like, I had to just take a break. I had to recharge, restart, refigure out how I can restart my life. And I started doing all this research, and I'm like, what do I do? Do I go back to school? Do I like fall back on things that I had done in my early 20s before restaurant management? I had no clue what to do. It was just as scary as suicidal thoughts, trying to restart your life at 40. But then I came across an article written about the fact that Robert Redford was making Bill Bryson's book, A Walk in the Woods, into a movie. I had read this book in my early 20s. And it's about hiking the Appalachian Trail. It's the stories that Bill Bryson put together, some fictional, some true, because he did take on some of the Appalachian Trail later in his life. And it was really focused not so much on the trail, but just someone who was trying to figure out what his purpose was in life. Bill Bryson had a lot going on, but he still felt a bit of emptiness. He still felt like something was missing, and he had to do something to try to put that together for himself. So I went out and picked this book back up, and I started reading it at 40. And it was a chapter or two in that light bulb flicked. And I said to myself, I think I could use a long walk. A long walk sounds like something that might be the first step in the right direction for me. Now, obviously, as someone who knew nothing about the wilderness, thinking about hiking 2,200 miles from Georgia to Maine, was a bit daunting.
Not you think?
Sure. The funny thing is, I knew it was going to be a bit more daunting for people to accept that I wanted to do this than it was for me making a decision to do it. Because here I was, suicidal. So what did I have to lose? You know, here was a leap, a big, crazy leap. But what did I have to lose? You know, for me, it's I've been thinking too often about ending life. So I was ready to do whatever it took. And obviously at that point, I wasn't ready to speak out loud about what I was really going through. I wasn't ready to like seek out help. It just, there was a wall there for me. I had to start another way. And so this decision to hike the Appalachian Trail was that first step. And I started putting a lot of work into understanding what that would be like. I started reading more about it. I started watching videos about it. And then I started discussing with my family and close friends what I was thinking about doing, knowing that those conversations would be a bit odd, that people would be looking at me like I was out of my mind, which I was. And I kind of gave a little bit, especially to my mom and my dad and my brother and like my best friend Chuck. I kind of said, "Hey, I'm not good mentally. I'm in a bad place, and you know, I'm sad a lot and I'm insecure and I just feel lost. So this is something that I think I need in my life. I need new direction." And with that, people accepted it. People laughed. People claimed I'd be back in a week. I understood. I knew it was coming when I put it out there. But I got ready and I put my life in a backpack and I jumped on an Amtrak train on March 14th. Down to Georgia. And, you know, I got on Springer Mountain, the start of the Appalachian Trail, on March 15th of 2015. And I started walking. And from there, I can tell you it's the walk that saved my life. It took me 6 months. I walked every step of it. And on September 15th, 6 months of the day, I summited Mount Katahdin and I became a thru hiker of the Appalachian Trail.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't think I can ever say that out loud and not kind of just get emotional knowing that something like that was accomplished.
It's a massive accomplishment.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
What did you encounter on the trail?
Well, I mean, you encounter a lot of things. The one thing is I didn't go in to the hike fit. I didn't get in shape for it. I was out of shape. So I actually knew going in, I said, you know, probably the hardest thing for you is going to be the first month and a half, because it's going to physically just be so difficult. You know, you're going to have to work yourself into shape. So I had an understanding that there were going to be a lot of aches and pains physically, you know, and I almost told myself, why don't we get through that? And then we'll start focusing on the mind. You know, you're going to have to put enough into making sure your knees feel all right or your back feels okay. Certainly early on up in the mountains down south of Georgia, North Carolina, it was pretty cold at night. You know, I dealt with freezing rain. My whole life was living in a tent, you know, or on a backpack. And this is the truth. The first time I had ever set up and slept in a tent in my life was night one of the Appalachian Trail. So I was really going in, you know, a rookie in all of this stuff. So
I know from experience, setting up a tent is not always easy.
It's not, right? And then cooking on the littlest stove you've ever seen. There goes the free cheeseburgers and fries that I would have at my restaurants that I was managing. It was going to be peanut butter and ramen noodles for a long time. So I encountered that. And, you know, and then as, you know, as I was moving along and fighting towards just getting physically in better shape, you know, the mind was already working its tricks and having conversations and even telling me at times, what are you doing? Why do you think you can do this? You can't do this. You're not cut out for this. But again, I just went in with this complete understanding that everything was going to be a challenge. No, everybody would go hike the Appalachian Trail if it wasn't a challenge. You know, at that point in 2015, it was still like more than 70% of the people that attempted it dropped out. So I knew, you know, the odds in a sense were against me, but you know, up until that point, the odds for life were against me. So I was going to do this. I knew from day one, I was going to get to Maine. I wasn't going to quit. I was tired of quitting. And so, go ahead.
Oh, no. I was just saying, from a mental health perspective, what sort of evolution did you see? Because there's a lot of time to think and reflect and to deal with, you know, the voices that we all have in mm-hmm. our heads.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, going in, knowing it was going to be such a challenge and that I knew it was going to try to break me, right? That's what it's there for. I started having this understanding that, like, once I had made this decision ahead of time before the trail that I wanted to live, but I needed guidance. I needed someone to kind of take me by the hand. That I think that was this point where the universe and Mother Nature kind of came together and basically just said, well, now he's ready to live. Let's go get him. Let's go get him, because we've been waiting to hear this. And now that he's found the ability to want to stay with us, let's go take him by the hand and guide him. And so when I got on trail and there I am in Mother Nature in all her glory, I knew, you know, like I understood that these challenges were going to be beyond any challenge that I had taken on such a long time in my life. But I could almost hear the wilderness saying to me, don't think this is going to be easy. We're going to make you earn every single step of this. But if you do it, you're going to find your way out of your darkness. It also just really made me understand as well that you don't get cured from mental health illness. You don't get cured from demons in the thoughts that you have. What you do is by challenging yourself and overcoming such challenges, you find a way to have the conversations with those voices in your head. It's more about taming them and kind of coming to an understanding. I say often that for so long of my life before hiking, I lived in chaos. You know, everywhere I was chaos. I ran bars, chaos. I lived in cities, chaos. My surroundings were chaos. I never, ever had any bravery to try to change my surroundings. And when I did, I honestly believe even the voices were kind of overcome with this, these new surroundings of mine, this beauty, this quietness, you know. Nature is just such an amazing place to have conversations when there's very little noise around you, but the noise that is such incredible beauty, whether it's birds, whether it's the winds, whether it's your feet just crushing on the pine as you walk forward. And I make it almost as a joke, but I said, you know, when there was that little devil sitting on my shoulder, yapping away, trying to tell me bad things. And then it kind of like looks out and sees where we are. It's almost taken aback. It's like, whoa, what am I so angry for? Look where we are. And, you know, this isn't a narrative that I created. This is truly how I feel when I'm out there. I spend so much time in wilderness now. You know, I've been since 2015, it's been majority of my life. And there's never a moment that I'm not in awe. There's never a moment where I'm like, I'm over it. I've seen enough. It literally hits me every day I get to spend time in it. And it gives me the strength and the ability to truly work with these voices in my head and let them know, you can say all this stuff, but man, I love life and you're not going to take that away from me.
You know, earlier you mentioned when you were, you know, contemplating this, that you felt you were presenting a different version of yourself to the world. And I think that I think we've all been through this, but I think you need to integrate yourself to find that path to happiness. Did you go through withdrawal at all going out into the wilderness? I mean, did you miss the hustle and bustle, or was it sort of an immediate sense of this is where I belong?
It was an immediate sense of this is where I belong. I really appreciated what it started teaching me, not just about myself and the things that I needed to kind of understand about myself, but it opened me up a lot. It made me a lot more open-minded and very less judgmental of people and things and the way the life should be. You know, I often think to myself when I was a restaurant bar manager, I was a stubborn little city guy who liked sports. And if you walked in my bar and you looked dressed differently, I was probably judging you before you even opened your mouth. But on the trail, you come across so many different types of people that you may never have even spoken to before, that you start having conversations with these people and you start to get an understanding what their life is about. You get an understanding of why they're on trail. You start seeing things that are similar and you start really kind of being in awe of the things that are different. And so, you know, when I talked to you earlier about, you know, how narcissism and my behavior specifically towards women in my life played such a role in my depression, the trail started kind of chipping away at that as well, because I was just so in awe of so much, and through awe came empathy. You know, a lot of love. I felt love constantly. So there was never any withdrawal. I didn't miss the things that brought out the worst in me. I was in this place now for the first time in a very long time in my life, was bringing out the best in me. And it was creating things and showing me things that I could be that, I mean, the excitement, the emotion, it just, I finally started figuring out that I was right for this place, that I was right for life.
What happened after you finished the Appalachian Trail?
Well, you know, I get to the finish there, and you would think that the fact that I hiked 2,200 miles would be the first thing that would, you know, blow me away. But it was more so just everything we kind of talked about, that I had this passion for life now. I knew coming off trail, that's when withdrawal was going to kick in. What do I do now? I got to go back to the Boston area. I got to get a job. You know, what kind of job am I going to get? And I actually ended up becoming a bartender. So, but here's the thing. I came off trail knowing that I wasn't going to be who I was, that whatever I did was going to build towards the life that I was now living and the life that I wanted. So I think I had an understanding that I had such a commitment to myself that the things that were happening before weren't going to start leaking in and take away what I learned. I also took on a job that was at a very fancy restaurant that closed at 11 o'clock. I went in, I did my job. I didn't manage. I left and I made the money to focus on this mantra that I started saying to myself very early on the Appalachian Trail, which is hike the good hike. When I came off a trail and I was just so amazed by everything and and certainly incredibly happy that now I wanted to live. The first thing that I thought to myself is, this is too good to keep to yourself. This has to be shared. You have to find a way to share your story, because I'm stating the obvious right here, but there are a lot of people that I know stood in my shoes. You know, I knew that there were probably a ton of people out there that were afraid to speak up, you know, or to come forward. You know, we witnessed suicide on a daily basis at an incredible rate. And that's because so many people just don't know where to turn. So I was like, you should do something with this. I don't know what that is. You know, you're going to have to keep hiking and let that develop, but there's something there and you should do something with it. And I had been blogging during the trail. So I started, you know, that was new for me. I had never written anything before 40, but it seemed like I was decent at it and I wanted to get better at writing. And so I took on a writing coach and there were just things that I was said, I could use social media and I can build around this and kind of let it evolve. I didn't know what it was, but I wanted to share it. And that was the first step. So everything that I was going to do when I got off the AT was going to be focused towards building Hike the Good Hike.
Thank you for joining us today. I hope you found something in today's podcast that inspires you along your own life's path, because sometimes a bump in the road is actually a portal into a more conscious and meaningful life. You can subscribe to our free podcast at www.bumpintheroad.us or become a premium member to hear the full conversation. Just go to www.bumpintheroad.us for more information and to sign up.